episode 583 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville. And yeah, as we get into the summer months, it's sometimes nice to just sit out on the porch and with a cool beverage and reflect on the year that's gone by.
Indeed, indeed. And yeah, we have quite a lot of shows still on the list that we... covered in the last 12 months, and we're going to be going through numbers 34 through 21 of our kind of countdown from the lowest to the highest here. And let's see, just going back and looking at the list up to this point, we started all the way back at number 53 with Falling Skies, and then Helix, Gotham, True Blood, Dig, The Librarians, Supernatural, The Lottery, Defiance, Sleepy Hollow, Star Wars Rebels, Elementary, The Vampire Diaries, Legends, Grimm, Homeland, Constantine, The Returned, and Doctor Who. And that's anywhere from down at 6.28 all the way up to, with Doctor Who, 7.76. So very quickly went from below average up to almost where what we consider to be the above average 8, which is not far from the list here. We're actually going to end right around at... when we switch over from the sevens into the eights here. So, nice. Yeah, we're going to be rounding out the rest of the average to above average material. So we have a good number of shows here on the list. And we're going to go ahead and start off with a show that I still can't believe that this consistently comes in at just entertaining... entertainment levels at this high quality of magnitude. 7.76 coming in also for The Musketeers Season 2.
Uh-huh.
Again, a show that, you know, was foreshadowing a very definitive end, especially in its final episode.
Yes.
For the season, only to be renewed.
Yes. I think they just barely did enough to have it both ways.
yes, just barely. But also at the same time, kind of foreshadowing, or at least a presaging for perhaps that the third season to come is going to be a very different animal from what we've seen for two years so far.
Yes.
And probably for the better, because this is a show that it wears its heart upon its sleeve. That's probably the best way to put it. But then it manages to both exceed and live up to those expectations pretty much in the same episode, week after week. Yeah, it's a show that I always think about it and think to myself, oh, it's that show, and I think of it on like a level of a Merlin or something, and then I watch the episode and I go, oh, no, this is better.
Yes.
I keep forgetting that.
Yeah, definitely. I've enjoyed many Musketeers adaptations over the years. There certainly have been so many of them, but they always rise or fall on how well you establish the camaraderie between the Musketeers, and I think they have done a very good job of that in terms of the way they work as a team, but still have their own differentiated characters and plot lines that they followed, and I think they've really excelled on that end, and even though on some of the royal and villainous end, they've gone sort of more over the top, but still, as you say, entertainingly so.
Absolutely. And let's see, going on from there, we have number 35, a new entry here on the list, just recently wrapping up its first season, and a show that I don't know that we thought was going to end up this high on the list, but I'm glad that it did. Again, 7.76. iZombie's first season.
Yes,
and we'll be talking about the season finale next show.
Yeah.
That's how right on the right up to the minute these scores have been. So we'll just move on from there.
Yeah.
And coming in at a 7.79, again, a show that when you think about it doesn't really come to mind that this would be a show that should have such a high score, and yet we had three different people giving it scores throughout the season, and it still wound up here. So it definitely had a lot of potential and promise. 7.79, the first season of Powers.
Hmm.
And yeah, and what's surprising about this is that it's one of those real examples, I think, of a show that, as we were watching it, we recognized that they didn't have nearly the budget that they wanted to do what they were doing.
Painfully so early on at times.
Yes, very painfully so. And yet they just stuck to their guns.
Yeah, but I think it was also a case of one of those cases where I don't think they quite realized going in just sort of how stretched they were going to be, and it really felt like they adapted over the course of this season, and certainly the moment they really pared it down and doing what was virtually those bottle episodes in the prison, it also meant they're starting to concentrate more on the characters is when it really did start to. Open up and improve, and certainly, upward trajectory throughout the season, and to the point where, again, there's with a couple of these introductory seasons this year, there was certainly an element of it that was setting things up, and then certainly by the finale, we had them ready to branch out in a different and more complicated direction.
Yeah, I know that certainly Gary brought some perspective to this one in terms of having a background with the source material and being able to weigh in on how well they were adapting it even within their constraints. But, we've said before and when we've talked a little bit about things like classic Doctor Who and even some other shows out there that one might even these days look back on our beloved Babylon 5 and say, hey, they did what they could with what they had.
Oh, yeah.
And what made it work? The writing. And, granted, sometimes on Powers the writing was a little dodgy, especially at the beginning when they were getting their feet wet and the cast took an episode or two to really come to their own. But I think it worked.
Yeah, definitely.
Let's see here. Now, moving on to number 31, we have... Now, technically, this season is not over quite yet. But at this point, the chances of it moving dramatically out of this position are fairly low, as it seems to have kind of settled in at a certain level. Mm-hmm. My concern is actually more that it might drop a little bit. And this is Orphan Black, Season 3.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And I say that I'm a little worried that it might drop a little bit because this was, unfortunately, a drop from the first two seasons in terms of where the scores are landing. It's coming in around 7.8 right now. And that's almost a half a point drop, and I know that for me, I can pretty much put it down to one word,
yes,
and that would be Caster.
Of course.
I just don't think that the introduction of the male clones has been done in a way that has been nearly as involving and intriguing as what we are used to from the Leda clones.
Mm-hmm.
And that is it maybe putting a little too much on the actor whose name I can't remember, because that's part of the problem right there.
Yes. It's Ari Mullen, but yeah,
well, there you go.
It's understandable. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Tatiana Maslany was such a revelation when mm-hmm. when the show started that you wanted to know who she was.
Yes, exactly.
And I don't I feel like maybe it could have been anyone going into that role was going to have this exact same problem. But I feel like you introduce another person who has to have that kind of multiplicity of talent, and it's rare.
Mm-hmm. I think I may have brought this up as speculation on the early episodes, but it seems like there was almost a deliberate decision to making the Caster clones more military based, so they would be sort of more rigid and less differentiated from the Leda clones, and realizing that nobody could go into playing another set of clones and even try and match what Tatiana had done, so deliberately making it a more limited set of variations, but unfortunately that just meant that the casters were less interesting than all of Tatiana's clones. I mean, to the point where, of course, they were even introducing another one this episode. But, again, so.
And again, we'll be getting more into that next time. But certainly the main thing is that my fear for this show, and I've said this many times, especially with the show getting renewed for a fourth season going forward, is that they keep expanding the story.
Yes.
In order to try and keep things going. And I feel like it's not as organic as the writers think it is. And there are times when I'm watching Orphan Black and I feel like the writers are being unnecessarily obtuse with the way that they are presenting situations and decision making,
mm-hmm.
Almost to just keep things really hard to follow.
Yeah, and also just the way their go to seems to be, no, let's just generate another layer of conspiracy as the latest revelation and thing we need to move on to, you know, because I mean I haven't quite figured out yet the Venn diagram of dyad and the Michelle Forbes thing and the military component. So there are times it's not just it's obtuse, but you're not sure how well it's sort of constructed in their own heads how all these parts are supposed to interlock.
There is that. I do feel like, though, just maybe to press the point slightly, is that there's a difference between writers not quite knowing where they're going and being cagey about that. And I feel like there's a completely different style when you know where you're going with something and you're trying to intentionally hold back from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like with Orphan Black, it's more the latter, where even in a scene, just the way that it's chosen to be written and the way that the characters act, they tend to act more in a way that leaves the audience with less information than they want or need, even to the point of having the characters ask completely ridiculous questions or not push on something or do something just mysterious just for the sake of mystery at sometimes. It's just part of the style of the show. It's always kind of been there, but I feel like it's gotten more and more blatant as time has gone on because they feel like that's part of the hook of the show to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's more that initially you can have a show that does something like that and it'll work fine because you set it up that there is a mystery. And as long as you get a sense that it's going somewhere and that you're not playing games with the audience,
mm-hmm.
the audience is willing to give you a bit of time to play with that mystery. But there comes a time where you say, okay, just play things straight, please. Just tell me what's going on. And there was that episode a couple back where they supposedly gave you the whole explanation for why this has been going on. And it turns out to be something to do with like sterilization experiments and things of this nature. But just because you've said that doesn't actually explain anything.
Yes.
And this is where it was like, the writers did like some interviews where like, oh, we finally pulled back the layer. It was like, what? No, you exposed the nerve. You didn't do anything at all. That's not explaining things. Just because you say this is the context of it does not in fact actually explain how everything fits into the context. But that's an example of what I'm talking about. It's
yes.
like you're intentionally holding back. And I know that there have been some other shows where I feel like that's gone to the detriment of some shows. I feel like some of the early parts of Grimm, for instance, they would do that. They would only tell you exactly what you needed to know and nothing more about why things worked that way. And it kind of did take a little bit away from the series at that point. But, this is just my ongoing frustration with Orphan Black. I feel like it's just a storytelling choice that, for me, doesn't quite work as well as they think it does.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, at the same time, it's coming in and it's at its lowest scored season at a 7.8.
Yeah, yeah.
Can't be that bad, I guess.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. I mean, aside from the fact that, they also, I think, scheduled it rather cannily because, the fact that it's on Saturday nights and on my DVR anyway, there isn't that much that's recorded around it. So, certainly most weekends, it is something I still look forward to. So,
exactly. Although it is going to be getting a lot of competition in the next few weeks, isn't it?
Yes.
Anyway, I guess it's a good thing that it's ending then. Let's move on then to the next show coming in at number 30 on the list. The Walking Dead Season 5 coming in at an average of 7.81. And I'm looking here and that is a half point drop from the previous season. And it's dangerously close to the lowest score for that show, in fact. I'm trying to recall exactly what it was that was not quite working for us this last season of Walking Dead, or not working as well for us. And I'm kind of coming back to the fact that they were really stretching the story out in the first half of the season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my memory as well. I think I'm the one not non-comic book reader, so I wasn't anticipating what was coming, but yeah, they did seem to be I think the worry is now that they seem so entrenched, it's almost like the opposite problem to Game of Thrones, where they're trying to make the material last longer. So and that 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 doesn't work if you need to keep propelling the story forward and you know, killing zombies and things, and then the good character stuff that most of us actually prefer the show for.
Yes. I am not going to say very much more because I don't want to spoil things for the one person who's not who hasn't read up to this point in the comic.
Well, I mean, I should say, I mean, I, you know, it's not like I'm strict about never reading anything, you know, so I sort of hear, you know, I mean, I hear tell of things and, you know, and yeah, a certain group that's out there that might be showing up. So.
Well, they left things on a very interesting note in the finale. I think that also the finale, as I recall, was one of those situations where I at least felt like it needed to have at least one scene past that.
Yes.
Just to give us a little more of a taste of where they were going in season six. But
it was that odd thing about that finale where they actually gave it an extra 15 minutes and then it still felt like they were stretching it out and like, you know, no, we need to go a little further.
Well, it is AMC.
Yes.
Another recent finale that seemed to have exactly the same problem. No, my fear for season six is that because they didn't give us that little bit of a hook to give us a sense of the pacing, is that there were certain storylines from the source material that happened at the same time as these early days in Alexandria. And I feel like they could very easily stretch out a lot of what is going on into the first half of the season and just run through those other storylines in the meanwhile. Where in the source material, things happen very quickly and then move on to the next story arc.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see them, for many reasons, including budgetary, pushing out the next big story other than the, you know, introduction into Alexandria. The next thing that happens is relatively quickly after. And I could see them pushing that out towards the end of season six.
Right.
And then we'd be right back where we are here. But what I don't want to see happen is another one of these kind of meandering storylines like what they did with Beth, where they foreshadow the heck out of things happening, and then it just takes eight episodes to play out. But anyway.
Yeah.
It's unfortunately possible because just of the way that they are structuring the show right now is in these eight-episode chunks. And then they kind of meander within that sometimes.
Which is kind of ironic since we've gone on for a while now about, you know, no, it'd be nice to have, you know, shorter, more focused arcs, and, you know, and with the way AMC is splitting everything now, they do actually have a perfect opportunity to try that, and yet, yeah, they still seem to have, you know, these inconsistencies of where you'll have a really good episode and then one that just seems to wander off.
Exactly. We shall see if they can maybe re-energize things a little bit, or at least avoid issues. We'll see. Yeah. This is The Walking Dead, after all. They kind of march to their own drum. Coming in at number 29, a little bit of a surprise to a lot of people here, I'm sure, is Resurrection Season 2, coming in at a 7.82, which is a 1.3 jump over the first season. And, yes, of course, the show has been canceled. Yes. And yeah. I'm of the mind that they kind of knew this was coming early enough that they just decided to just put out what they could in the time they had left and to heck with everything else. And it just became the second season overall was a much more focused and exciting show. I believe it was I'm blanking on this name. She played Caitlin on Game of Thrones. Michelle Fairley?
Yes.
I want to say.
Yes.
Yes. She came in as part of the cast and really brought a very interesting layer to what was going on in Arcadia. And it was just a good story that had a very weak beginning. And I think it never quite got away from that weak start. Yeah. And there were many people that felt like even when it got renewed for a second season that it was kind of DOA.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't imagine that the producers and writers weren't aware of that and just said, okay, time to pull out the stops. And the worst that can happen is that we surprise ourselves and get renewed.
Mm-hmm.
But the writing was on the wall. The ratings were terrible right from the start of the second season. And no matter how good the show was going to be, you just did not have the support needed to go on from there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, certainly. I mean, you know, that was one that I did drop early on, and even though I could tell from your reviews, it was getting better. But yeah, I think it was just the case of that coming out so poorly at the start. And even though I'm one of those people who always bemoans, you know, series not getting the opportunities to round into what they could be. But this unfortunately was a case where no, I mean, it set the bar so low early on. It was hard to pick anybody up later.
Yeah. And really, this is one of those cases where going a little darker actually worked out better from a story perspective. Let's see. In its one season on the air, NBC, once again, here we go. But this one, I think everybody expected to be a one-season show, and so I'm not sure why everyone was so upset when it got when it didn't get picked up for a second season. That is Crossbones,
yes,
the John Malkovich vehicle, coming in at an average of 7.83. And, you know, we did talk about other shows that were just unabashedly kind of guilty pleasure type shows.
Yes.
This would be a great example of that.
Absolutely.
not all that historically accurate. Kind of ludicrous.
Yeah, I was going to say, but, yeah, not even really trying to be.
No. But what other show can you think of on the regular networks that would have a basically a trepanning exercise take place where they were kind of apple coring someone's skull?
Yes. Yeah, indeed. And of course, foreshadowed that by, having seen where you get to see John Malkovich with acupuncture needles coming all out of his head, like, what's his name from the horror series?
Pinhead?
Pinhead, there we go, of course.
Yeah. Just a little on the nose, but anyway. Yeah, I mean, it was exactly what it was putting itself out as, so, and I really do seem to remember that when it was originally promoted, that it was promoted as a one-season series.
Oh, absolutely.
Like it was, yeah. So, yeah, I don't know why everyone was so shocked. It didn't even end on a cliffhanger.
No.
It ended definitively. Anyhow. One of the biggest surprises from this last season, coming in at number 27, the first season of 12 Monkeys, coming in at an average of 7.88.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this was really just a show that came out of nowhere. And I don't know how the ratings were. They were apparently good enough to get the show renewed, but I mean, I just remember our skepticism.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, especially given the source material and, the Terry Gilliam film that, seemed pretty well wrapped up in its own right. I mean, that whole loop is kind of what it's all built around. So the idea of how it could be expanded and certainly, hats off to sci-fi, because this was a case of one of the series that they did actually develop themselves rather than just re-airing a Canadian show or a New Zealand show. So, It was good to see that this new commitment they've talked about for getting back to more straight up sci-fi is working out so far.
Mm, yeah, I can only hope that sci-fi continues to take these types of chances, even when they kind of turn out to not be the best ideas, like picking up Olympus.
Yes, well.
Well, I don't know who. Somebody must have made, anyway. That was someone paying off karma somehow. But 12 Monkeys was the kind of chance that I hope they continue to take, which is just, we're going to take this concept and we're going to just run with it and play with it and see what happens. And yeah, I can't wait for it to come back.
Yeah, and certainly also, I mean, they did a very good job of setting up the some of the paradoxes and things to the point where yes, I'm looking forward to it coming back, and I definitely want to rewatch the first season now that I know what happens at the end. So because I know they were seeding it throughout, and it's one of those cases where you definitely go back and then see the stuff that to be revealed later.
Yeah, I'm not even sure if I got to the end of the first season and really even know what was going on. But it was really good,
yes.
Regardless. There's a sense of they never really played coy with the audience. They just kept explaining how much more complicated it was going to be getting.
Yes.
Coming in at number 26, a show that a few people may have forgotten about, but it is coming back for a second season, and this is The Leftovers, with an average of 7.89. And I just remember how dark it was, and that it was so dark that Gary just couldn't handle it.
Yeah.
Which made it perfect to talk about all the time.
Yes, well, of course, it is a show that has a certain association with another show. So, I think Gary may have been a little prejudiced just sort of from the start. So.
It's possible. Yes, of course, this is a show that is run by Damon Lindelof.
Yes.
Do want to point out, of course, that it is based on a novel and that the author of the novel is also kind of co-running the show with Lindelof. So it's it's one of these interesting adaptation yet you know, direct influence by the author is involved. Not unlike Robert Kirkman being involved with The Walking Dead, for instance, and things of that nature. So we'll see where there's supposed to be some fairly substantial changes for the second season. I think this was one of these retooling situations. But that being the case, there was more than enough going on in the first season that I'm intrigued to see how they can delve into similar themes in the second season. It's not an easy show to watch. It brings up a lot of difficult concepts and a lot of difficult emotions, but at the same time, I feel like it's doing it very well, and it's very thought-provoking.
Yeah, definitely, and certainly it it seems to be a something going on at HBO recently where they seem to always have now or at least one show where people wind up vociferously debating whether it's any good or not with with the newsroom and this. I mean, it was two cases of where some people, including us, were obviously giving it above average ratings, and other people were just like, no, this is complete trash and doesn't know what it's doing, and I can't watch it.
Yeah. Let's see, the next show on our list, and this one I'm sure is a surprise to some people out there, but I stand by it. Number 25, Bitten Season 2 is trending right now. It's still not quite done, but it's still trending towards a 7.89, which is a significant jump up from the first season. And to me, this is all about the two choices. Number one, the writers are being a little more free with their adaptation of the source material. And at the same time, they, instead of having 13 episodes to try to fill, they only had 10. And for the most part, it has given them a lot more opportunity to tell a tighter, more more focused story. And yeah, it's been pretty good. It's maybe showing a little bit of signs of falling apart towards the end here, but we shall see. But for right now, I definitely enjoyed the second season more than the first. The first, it just seemed to struggle in order to maintain its level of quality, and it had a really terrible start. I remember that a bunch of us watched the first episode, and
the main
character is not an easy one to crack, and I think they just went about it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I lasted about three episodes or so before I just listened in on your reviews.
Yes, and I seem to recall that the first season being 13 episodes, that it didn't really turn a corner until right around the mid-season. And the first few episodes, yeah, all came in below average. And then it kind of started to pick up. And then, boom, right in the middle, it finally kicked over.
Mm-hmm.
And became a kind of the show that it's been in the second season. But, when you wait half a season to get there, it's going to take its toll. So it's definitely an interesting show. It's not for everyone, I will say that. But this is one of those rare examples of kind of a show taking the True Blood path of adapting material kind of out of order and doing what's necessary to do for a TV series versus a strict adaptation of a bunch of relatively disconnected books. I mean, they're all the same characters. There is a timeline involved, but they're told from various points of view. So to take that and make it more of a television series adaptation where you've got various characters that need to be followed, it requires a freer hand, and I think that they're doing a nice job of that. I really have no sense whatsoever as to whether this show will be renewed. However, I can say that if you just look at the Canadian ratings, it's the best show on its channel right now.
Yeah.
It has huge ratings, but we've seen that for shows like Continuum, just because it has great ratings in Canada doesn't mean that that's going to be good enough. I mean, the reason that Canada makes all these deals with international licensing and such is because they need support from international investors, I guess, in order to keep things going.
Yep.
And and
it's also people do forget how certainly compared to the U.S. how small Canada's population is. So yes, even though you're getting a good rating, it's still a matter of it's in a million or two or maybe a few for a big hit. So it's not quite like the viewing numbers south of the border.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we've talked before about how a studio might be able to help cover some of the costs with in balance with the network after one or two seasons, but after that, it becomes a much harder exercise on the part of the network to keep it going, and they just don't have the capital. They don't have the kind of budgets that some of the American networks do, and it's almost like a very small cable network. And we see the same kind of thing happen. It lasts a couple seasons, and then unless it gets an infusion of cash, it either dies very quickly or it goes the route of Lost Girl, where the budgets get slashed tremendously year to year. And I think Lost Girl, unfortunately, is going to end on a much lower spot than it started as a result. Certainly is not the same show that we started watching 5 years ago.
No.
But Bitten, hey, you know, if it only has a couple seasons, two or three of relatively high quality, then all the better for it.
Yes, that's our new being human US rule.
Yes, indeed.
Fewer seasons, higher quality.
Yeah, exactly. It almost happened to Being Human US. You're right. A show that perhaps should have learned a similar lesson. Number 24, wrapping up its series run this past year, Mad Men. Its seventh season coming in at a 7.91, which did come in a hair above the previous season, but definitely not at the type of heights that we had seen in its heyday.
Yeah, and I just need a little clarification, which is also an indicative of one of the major problems. Now, this was for season seven in terms of this year's episodes and last year's episodes combined, right?
That is correct.
Okay. Since, yeah, we were talking about the way way AMC splits its seasons, and certainly, you know, yeah, I mean, this whole thing of taking the final season and not just splitting it, but then splitting it so they're a year apart was, you know, I do not think helped, because this is not a case like Breaking Bad, where they had this very definitive end that they were driving driving for, and certainly with the way Don's life was going and everything sort of falling apart, it was a far less dramatic finale, and I do not think was helped by having it split into the 2 7-episode arcs. I think it would have. I'm convinced that, you know, we might have felt a little more a little better about it if we'd just seen it all in one 14-episode run.
Oh, definitely. I mean, all the little, or not little, all the extended hiatuses throughout the last few years of the show just completely destroyed the momentum of it in the popular culture. I think I mentioned during the discussion of the series finale that one of the biggest problems for me was just the discordance between the way that the last several episodes were being promoted and the actuality of the utter lack of water cooler type talk about the show anymore.
Yes.
They were talking about the show's last episodes as though it was going to be this huge cultural touchstone that in this, they really overplayed it so much that it almost became embarrassingly off tone.
Yes.
And meanwhile, I struggled to find anybody who was still watching the show because people forgot it was on the air.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, they're like on AMC, like talking about the end of an
End of an
era and
era.
these big sweeping orchestral, you know, scores playing behind these big retrospective like commercials and things. And I'm like, no one is talking about you.
Yeah, no. Well, of course. The other thing that amused me about all of that was because they were also committing the fatal mistake of, you know, yes, showing all those clips from those early seasons when the show, you know, unfortunately was better than it ended. So it was like reminding you of like, oh yes, that's why I got into it.
So one could say that what they needed was a good advertising company to help them figure out how to do this right. Perhaps.
Yes.
Irony.
Yes.
Meanwhile, we have shows that continue to show up on our list here towards the perhaps the middle of the list, but still much higher than any of us would have anticipated, that were just shows that were you know, networks trying new things. And this one was a TNT drama last summer that kind of blew us all away. It was really one of the banner shows of the summer season last year, and it was The Last Ship season one, coming in at an average of 7.95.
Yes.
Yeah, completely shocking result as far as I'm concerned, because we kept making fun of the premise.
But it was both the premise and the fact that it was coming from Michael Bay. So we assumed, yeah. Okay, military porn and lots of boom. So.
And it was. And then it turned out to be this great character drama.
Yes. Yeah, said, exactly.
How did that happen for Michael Bay? Yes. It's clearly somebody else was doing something behind the scenes.
I'm kind of like with J.J. Abrams, of course, I think it's, where he's executive producer and, it's those guys he hired to run the actual show that are giving us this.
Oh, absolutely. And not to discount at all the fact that the cast actually turned out to be much better than what we've seen them in before. And again, a show that going into its second season, not too long from now, we really don't know where it's going to go. And that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. I still stand by my original kind of analogy that this is kind of the story of Crusade, just in a very different context.
Oh, sure.
But it's playing out in almost uncannily similar ways.
Yeah, no, and actually, I just remembered that, of course, that first season came out, it was right around the time of that first season of Helix, and I remember that pilot episode where it was like, oh, you just did all of Helix's first season in one episode,
in like 5 minutes, yes. And it was more, it was better plotting in those 5 minutes. I'm really looking forward to it coming back. I do have a little bit of a worry in the back of my mind that after coming out strong in the first season that, it's like, where do we go from here? And that it could kind of have a sophomore slump, but
yeah,
we'll find out. This is a show that's defied our expectations from the start.
Well, exactly. Yeah, but certainly, now that they're sort of, they're in that situation of kind of trapped on land and, dealing with, the interim governments that have popped up, they're going to have to write that particularly well, I think, it's mm-hmm. certainly a good start and focusing on the ship and, and the dynamics and, and of course the Russian rival and all that. But now it could, if they're starting to get into more West Wing House of Cards territory, trickier writing straits to navigate.
Absolutely, and that's exactly it, right? It's how are they going to manage that, because it is such a tonal shift, and that's where I say I am slightly concerned that they could slump because of they're kind of being overly ambitious. But then again, I said, they defied our expectations from the beginning.
Exactly.
A show that I really hope gets picked up for a third season, as it has been surprisingly strong from a storytelling point of view, despite a slight dip in its second season, is Turn, coming in at number 22 with an average of 7.97. Again, a slight dip, maybe, a quarter of a point, which is not too bad. But you could definitely get the sense that this was a season that has been recipient of retooling.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, very good. But I think the first few episodes, it took a while for it to find its footing once again.
Yes, definitely.
And that kind of took a little – where I feel like some of this where the score dropped a little bit was right at the very start, and then it kind of picked back up where it belonged.
Yeah, definitely, and we're not just saying we want it renewed just because they haven't completed the Benedict Arnold Peggy Shippen arc yet. It's not because we want to see Ksenia Solo wrapping both of those men around her little finger.
No, and we'll I'm sure get into other reasons when we talk about the season finale next episode.
Yes,
and we'll still be talking about Ksenia Solo and wrapping things and so forth. Count on it. Then we have finally coming in for number 21 on the list, The Original Season 2, coming in at 7.98. Yeah, that would be a real twist.
A shocking result, yes.
Yes.
You might even think there was magic involved.
Indeed. It's a 0.2 point jump from the first season, and probably not surprising given all the comments I've made all season long, but this is a case of the child eclipsing the parent, where the Vampire Diaries has kind of lost its way since before the spinoff even came out. The Originals has been the beneficiary of a much tighter focus, especially after it resolved some of its issues earlier in the first season. The second season has been much, much better and more consistent. And yeah, it's just been enjoyable across the board. again, this is kind of, this show is doing what The Vampire Diaries used to do well. So, you know, one could then be somewhat concerned, okay, how long can they keep this going with the originals? Well, I don't know. But they completely rebooted The Vampire Diaries for all intents and purposes, so maybe they'll do the same thing over there now.
Yes.
I don't know. But for right now, I mean, I'm far more interested in what's going on in the originals than The Vampire Diaries, that's for sure. But that brings us up to our top 20 for the future, and that's where we get into some really some shows that really deserve some extra attention. So I'm sure that we will be waiting until we get a few more of our compatriots back to our graces. Any thoughts on the shows that we covered in the last couple episodes here, Edmund? Any surprises for you?
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, when you're getting into this middle section, you know, yeah, even though I always have, you know, all of the shows we cover, even though I'm sort of trying to tick them off in my head as we go along, I'm still always kind of surprised in terms of hearing exactly where stuff wound up. But for all of these shows, I mean, it's, you know, no stuff where they were mostly good, maybe needing a little tweaking here and there, except for, of course, the ones that have already been canceled, so we'll never know.
Unfortunately, we never will. And in the top 20, we still have some shows that were in fact canceled, and we have all of those shows, however, coming in above an average of 8. So this is where we really get to see how this season has panned out far better than past years, because there were some years where we would maybe be lucky if the top 10 was above 8.
Yes.
And now we have 20 shows that are above 8. So that is telling you just how good the last season has been to us as genre television watchers. That's for sure. So next time we are going to get into this week's episodic discussion. And yeah, I think that there's some big episodes for us to talk about there. So stay tuned for that one.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.